And now the jazz franchise enters a new era with a new look. Tradition giving way to the winds of change.
Four is the marketing scheme of it and the colors. These are the colors that people buy, you know, purples, the blacks, and stuff like that. And I don't think we missed too many colors. No, we did. We didn't miss too many.
Okay, so when the Jazz unveiled their new logo back in 1996, maybe not everybody loved it. Welcome to The Note. I'm Aaron Falk with UtahJazz.com. You just heard Karl Malone kind of grin and bear it at the official unveiling of the Mountain logo in 96. Here's the late Larry H. Miller with a less than enthusiastic soundbite of his own from the same press conference.
In the end, I think the colors came together very nicely, and both the home and away uniforms, I think, have a nice look to them. So aside from the traditional aspects of it, I like what we're doing, but that part of it you know, carries a lot of emotion with it, and especially relative to John and Carl's careers with the team. So maybe in that regard, this comes 2 or 3 years, 4 years early, but... you know, the decision's been made and we're moving on with it.
Miller actually asked John Stockton about it back then, what he thought about making the change. Here's what Stockton said a couple of years ago.
I remember Larry asking me about changing jerseys, and I said, nope. You know, I know my opinion. I didn't want to change anything. The Yankees don't change their logos. It was kind of my attitude, so why do the Jazz have to change theirs? But anyway, he took my advice and put it where it mattered, I guess, and...
You know what happened next? Miller made the change anyway. You know what happened after that? The logo became kind of iconic in its own way. It represented a change in geography, the first time the team's aesthetic shifted from the Mardi Gras roots to the Salt Lake slopes. It would come to represent a shift in fortunes, the Jazz breaking through a postseason plateau to reach the NBA Finals in back-to-back seasons. And eventually, the Mountains would mark the end of an era when the Hall of Fame careers of John Stockton and Karl Malone came to a close in Utah.
You know, and years later, you look back on it, that's the logo, really, that we went to the finals in and had our, you know, some of our greatest experiences and memories as players. And so I'm kind of torn now. But
on this episode of The Note, I'm joined by Ben Barnes, the creative director for the Utah Jazz, and Jay Francis, who was the head of marketing in 1996. We talk about the logo's backstory, the pros and cons of all of these random colors Karl Malone alluded to, and what the Mountain logo means now in the year 2019. I'm Aaron Falk with UtahJazz.com.
I'm Ben Barnes with Utah Jazz. I'm our director.
All right. Well, we're here with Jay Francis, who was... What was your title back in 1996 when these jerseys came out?
I was, well, Senior Vice President of Marketing and Public Relations.
Okay. And first of all, if we can just start, like, what's your reaction knowing that these jerseys and this look's coming back for a season?
Well, I'm kind of excited because it means, you know, the stuff that you worked on back then and that it has some legs and it's coming back. It's part of nostalgia. It's part of our history. And so it's kind of fun, you know, when we get into it, it was after we created it, we kind of realized we created our own worst enemy. But it was fun to go through that back then.
So I have a question: is how long ago before the rebrand were the wheels in motion? How long did it start?
Well, I think I'm going to surprise you. You know, the wheels really were in motion to make some changes back in 1983. I was hired by Sam Battistone in June of '83 to be the director of marketing, and then a couple of months later, Vice President of Marketing, and then Dave Chekos was hired in August of '83 to be the Executive Vice President. And we had done some research with Dan Jones and Associates, and the fans and the public just didn't connect with us. It was, you know, this was a team that came from New Orleans. It had the New Orleans colors. It was the only thing they did was take out New Orleans and put in Utah. And jazz as a music wasn't indigenous in Salt Lake. And so there was no connection. So we had put the league on notice that the next year we were going to change the name and the logo. Now, back in '83, the league wasn't as sophisticated as it is today. And so, you know, notices, you didn't have to have the multiple year notice and the millions of dollars that it takes today. So it was really easy. But we realized '83, '84 season was a kind of a Cinderella season for the Jazz. Ricky Green led the league in assists. Adrian Dantley led the league in scoring. Mark Eaton led the league in block shots. Frank Layden won the J. Walter Kennedy Coach of the Year Award. We went to the playoffs, you know, second round. We were Cinderella kids. And all the national publicity we got, we couldn't replace with the logo change. And so we did the financial kind of analysis. And finally, people knew who the Utah Jazz were. It wasn't a musical team that traveled around and played, you know, saxophones. So we said, we just got to abandon it. But we kept thinking, somewhere, someday, we've got to change the logo to be more indigenous with Utah.
Right. So, which is interesting, because if the rules would have been in place back then of having to ask for those things 2 years in advance, the logo would have already been ready to go for the next season. It would have already been, the uniforms would have been ready,
right,
to go, and then you would have had all this, the community would have been all about the Jazz, and then the next year it's like, just kidding, we're not the Jazz anymore.
Right, well, and so, and that in 83, 84, we sold more novelties, and novelties weren't what they are today. Team stores, I mean, it was a table and a backdrop. But we sold more pens, pencils, bumper stickers, T-shirts, pennants. I mean, that was kind of your novelty store. But we sold more in 83, 84 than the previous 5 years they'd been in Utah. You know, so we really kind of had, we couldn't move forward position at that time.
And that was the beginning of a long run of playoff appearances, right? That was the first of, I think, was it 20 in a row?
Yeah, a long, long time in the playoffs.
So what changed your mind? How long did it take to say, okay, maybe we do change the logo?
I think, you know, we always was in the back of our mind. But finally we just said, you know, we ought to do something to bring Utah into it so that there is that local connection. And so, well, so what is Utah? Well, it's mountains, it's Kennecott Copper, and so, you know, that's, you know, and we worked with the NBA. It was a long process,
yeah.
And they had their logo, their artists were creating versions. We had some people here, you know, submitting some suggestions, and we got down close. We even got the team involved and said, "What do you think?"
Yeah.
You know, and they, you know, so that, because they have to wear it, right?
Yep.
And so we got kind of, one of the colors was, you know, a copper color for, you know,
yep,
for the copper mine, obviously the mountains and the snow and stuff. So
you kept purple, you like carried over from
to carry the thing, we brought the purple, a little bit different hue of purple, mm-hmm, but we kept the purple, and people loved it at first. I mean, it was, you know, I don't think they ever didn't love it. We grew to not love it from a marketing and advertising, and when having to reproduce it became really tough.
Which is what we're noticing right now as we're bringing this back, is there's about six colors in these logos, and they're very fine lines, and reproducing that copper on different types of material is very hard to match.
The copper is really tough. It comes out pink, it comes out salmon.
Brown.
The copper was tough, and we kind of quickly realized that we'd created an animal that was going to be, you know, even you could give them a Pantone color, but that doesn't match in stitching or embroidering,
right,
or foil.
Yep.
You know, so it was tough.
We were watching some team produced videos about the unveiling, which one was amazing because it's the unveiling was John and Carl at a press conference, and Carl literally like pulls off a warm up suit and you know, is wearing the press, you know, the uniform in front of the press now. They did not seem overly enthused. Like they were accepting, but Carl was like, "We don't think we missed a lot of colors with this look right here. We've got purple, we've got teal," which was, I mean, you were talking about this earlier, like how popular was teal then?
This was the mid-90s when it seemed like every team was going teal, and I'm sure that the market research said that it was a very fashionable color, and the Hornets, the Grizzlies, there's NFL teams like the Jaguars, everyone's
exactly
jumping on the teal bandwagon. And now, if anything, the Jazz could, it is a shade of green, and green was in our color scheme, so we could at least point to that if we wanted to. But, you know, also another thing I was thinking about is the mountain logo bears a lot of similarities to the All-Star Game logo from 1993 with the mountains and the ball. And I'm wondering how much of an influence seeing the All-Star Game logo here in Salt Lake made people think, you know what, maybe there's something we could do with mountains for our logo. Do you think that had any effect on it?
It might have, because, you know, a lot of it was NBA influenced, mm-hmm, and their graphic packages. And so I think it, you know, that could have had, could have had an influence in the designers of what they were doing.
That's cool. So what were the, I know you talked about being more indigenous. What were the objectives you gave the NBA when it was, when you said we want to change our logo? What did you tell them you needed them to make?
Well, I think we talked about, we gave them a list of things that were, you know, that Utah was all about. Mm-hmm. Skiing, mountains. We really didn't touch on, you know, Southern Utah at the time. And we talked about, you know, the Ochre Mountains and the, you know, the copper mines, and that mining was a big, you know, settling part of, you know, we talked about the pioneers, but that just didn't fit in, you know, the pioneer heritage and stuff. So then they came back, and maybe, like you said, maybe it, the All-Star, you know, had an influence in that.
And I'm imagining that once you got to that point, it had been 15 years that the team had been here. Probably at that point, the name change was off the table, I'm guessing, by 96.
Because we were the Utah Jazz.
It's like no more. And that's right. The thing that I think that every time, we've been here 40 years now, and I still get people saying, that doesn't make any sense to have the Jazz in Utah. There's no Jazz.
It should have been changed in 79 when they came.
Right, but the good thing I like, I mean, the Jazz doesn't mean music to us. It means basketball.
Yeah.
And you have something for long enough, it takes on a meaning of its own. And
right. Well, it's kind of like when we created a mascot. You don't have to have a mascot that represents the nickname of your team. You know?
Right.
What do you have somebody out there running around in looking like a saxophone? You know, we created Bear because Bear was athletic, Bear was strong, Bear, you know, and so. And maybe bears are indigenous to Utah, you know, but
and that he came out before the mountain logo as well, I believe.
He was about 93 because we went in the arena in 91, mm-hmm. and we had the Jazz dancers first and then mascots second. So probably 93, 94.
So as you know, talk about the name change was off the table, but one thing that seems to be a consideration was Stockton and Malone and their timeline, how their career timelines might line up with this. And in that video I was talking about, like Larry Miller says, well, maybe this is 3 or 4 years too early in that regard because, you know, we don't know how long John and Carl will be on the team. Maybe we should have kept or could have kept that look throughout their entire career, but go through with it. Anyways, how much of a consideration was that for you in this, if at all?
I don't think it was. You know, I think that we looked at it from a business and a marketing, something we needed to move forward with, a timing that, you know, and as well as, you know, the NBA was pushing us as well. You know, they like uniform changes because that means novelty sales or, you know, souvenir sales. And, you know, it's also was about the time when teams started doing their secondary road uniforms. And everybody, you know, so we didn't introduce that the first, I think it was like the year after.
It was 99.
We came out with the black and copper secondary road uniform.
Yeah.
And again, that's when we got some feedback from some of the players was, this isn't copper, this is paint.
It's hard color to match.
You know, it was, so, I mean, that we got some feedback, but that was like the second or third year. So the NBA, you know, had some influence there too because, you know, I'm sure that just like today, you know, how many uniforms do we have today, you know, with the Jazz? About 4 or 5 when you
at
count
least.
The state, you know, state version and the green, the white, the yellow, you know.
The classic.
You know, I mean, I remember, you know, sitting there last year, I was sitting with a younger kid and said, you know, thought we were playing the Lakers when we were wearing our yellow jerseys. So,
speaking of that, were there any other colors when the alternate road uniform came out? Were there any other colors you considered besides black?
I'm not sure what I had for lunch. And it's just only, no, I'm just kidding. So, I don't really remember. I think we looked at teal because, you know, teal was.
I'm sure you probably looked at that, yeah.
But black was really selling
throughout
the NBA. And so I think we really got a strong encouragement from the NBA. You know, we need to have this black road uniform. And so.
And I know a lot of people that still have a lot of love for that uniform. But it's interesting to me that you talked a little bit about how we've talked a bit about how the players and fans liked the uniform when it came out? Was it an overwhelming, everybody loved it, or were there some that maybe didn't have as fond of feelings for it when it came out?
It was interesting. Our receptionist, said that most of the calls were coming in, that the day we announced it, said they loved it, and that was the push. There were, some loyal 1979 fans, that said, this is breaking up history. They're not giving any credence to the past, and we never got rid of it. In fact, the NBA required us to keep the old note as kind of our official logo. And so everything else was kind of like a secondary logo.
Interesting.
So that we, and I think that's how it is today.
Yeah, you keep the old stuff as a heritage mark, I think is what they say. So we can still use it, but.
Yeah, so I think people were welcome to a change.
Yeah.
And they thought it was, initially fun. So.
And I'm sure it helped that we started. We were a winning franchise before that, but going to the finals in those uniforms and that logo, usually if a team does that, it cements that logo in people's brains as more than just a logo.
Yeah. Winning covers up lots of blemishes. whether it's uniforms, logos, or other things, ticket pricing.
And that's what I've noticed. I think as we're bringing this back, first of all, I feel like I'm not old enough for us to be throwing back to a uniform that I was in high school when it came out, but that's just time, I suppose. But you notice that there are a lot of people that are that maybe weren't big fans, but are now because of the moments that it reminds them of. It's the time period it reminds them of with this uniform, the different eras that it
goes to. Well, let me ask you, Ben, you were really into design even at that young age. What were your thoughts on the design of this when it came out, and you're a kid and you're a fan, and what are your thoughts on it now? And I'll ask Jay the same thing. What are your thoughts on it now, 20 years later, with the perspective that you have career wise?
Sure. I was 16 or 17 when that came out, and I loved it. It was my favorite thing in the whole world. I would try and draw that snowflake ball logo as much as I could. Just everything about it was my favorite. And then, then later on I went to college and I went to graphic design school, and I started to learn that, wow, maybe there's a reason why some of these really timeless logos are simpler and not as layered. I mean, the illustration and the talent it takes to create something that detailed, you can't ignore. But as far as an iconic logo, it starts to lose it when you reproduce it at smaller sizes. But there's this nostalgia for me that I always look back to that. I'll always have fond memories of going to the finals and just, that time period of my life, looking at that mountain logo.
Yeah, Jay, were you always, on board with the logo? Did you have doubts? Beyond just the reproduction on, novelties and that sort of a thing, or just sort of the aesthetic? How did you feel about it in the midst of this run, and how do you feel about it now?
No, I think initially and for a long time I was on board, because there was also the word mark, the jazz that you pull out of the mountains. Mm-hmm. And it kind of had some motion to it, and it kind of had energy. And I liked that. And we used that a lot more than we did the mountainscape logo. We started to, again, because of the reproduction. And I forgot about what I'm going to, the other word marks, the little ball with a snowflake.
The UJ.
Yeah, the UJ. And that became, that was something that we wanted, because we didn't have, we weren't smart enough, I guess, back then to break out the jazz note, mm-hmm. of the New Orleans jazz note. And so that became kind of a button logo that we could put on the sleeve of a shirt or on the pocket of a shirt without a big old jazz logo.
And that time period, and the NBA did a really good job with this with a lot of those teams, is they would take these primary logos and make derivations of that logo to make secondaries for merchandise and, like you said, on polo, and give you a lot more options of logos that fit within this toolkit. And that's a thing that even to this day, I mean, every sports designer does that. There's different versions of that. And I don't know if it, I'm sure it went back before then, but that's when I first started noticing it with all of the NBA teams and WNBA teams from back then that would do that.
This was during David Stern's era. He started commissioner, I believe it was 1984. And, he really changed marketing And you know, they had an organization called NBA Properties, and everything was managed by them, and whether it was logos, logo approval, and that's changed. But he really put, I mean, our, you know, I went to the very first marketing meetings, you know, when I was in 83, September of 83, they had what they had, they called league meetings. And the, so all the marketing directors from the league, and we fit in a small meeting room at Little America. And, you know, the last marketing meetings that I went to, and this would be, you know, 15 years ago, we were in half of a grand ballroom. That was the marketing departments. So, you know, David Stern, and this was all part of it, you know, freshening up, relook, new looks, new uniforms, new sales, and he was a master of, he may have been an attorney by education, but he was a master of, at marketing.
I know, being on this side of things where I do a lot of design work, I know there's always rejected options. You come up with what you think is the answer, and it gets turned down for whatever reason. Do you, I know it's a while ago, do you recall any other variations of the logo, any other directions that they went in other than what we ended up seeing?
You know, I wish I did. I don't. I wish I could think, but I'm sure it was just...
Maybe they nailed it on the first try.
No. I think that there were different variations without the circle, mm-hmm. Trying some things with the mountains, but I really don't remember how that all kind of morphed into what we have.
That's cool.
Well, now we got to make sure that you're out there for a game, or we'll get you some, get you some mountain swag as this goes on, because we'll have a... I think this season it's going to be 11 home games in the mountain jersey, on a mountain court, throwback court, back to that 96-97 look. And I think Ben, you hit it on the head. Like, there, I've seen so many people on Twitter who, you know, they loved it then and they love it now, or the alternative was, this came out, I hated it. I thought it was, you know, whether it was just because they got away from history or what have you, didn't like the colors. Like, I hated it then. Absolutely love it now. I'm just so, like, there's just so many good memories tied up in it. And I think it's a mix of, like you said, winning and that nostalgia of that era. And then there's like a hipster element to it of just like, this is a retro throwback. And I like that feeling. Like, we're kind of edgy and paying homage in a very cool way.
And it's fun. It's fun to pay tribute to our history. I think we have a really diverse history of uniforms.
And I think people have lots of, you know, fond memories, or they create memories through sporting events. You know, they may have taken their grandson, they may have taken their daughter. And so to be able to spin back, you know, brings back those good memories. Or whether it was at a finals game, or whether it was at a playoff game or a regular game, or I was there the first night they wore them.
So. Well, and we reached the highest heights wearing that uniform set. You know, everyone knows where they were when Stockton hit the shot, wearing the purple mountain jersey. I mean, I remember where I was. I was in Wyoming for some reason.
Well, I guess we need to tell Quinn, if they get to the finals, they got to wear the mountain jerseys.
Jay, well, hey, we really appreciate the time. Super cool to share in this history, and we're excited to roll this out and bring back that vision you guys had back in 96 back to life for our fans today. So super excited, and thank you very much.
You're welcome. Good to be with you.
Thanks for listening to The Note. I'm Aaron Falk. Visit UtahJazz.com for more news, podcasts, and videos.